This is part three of the interview I did with Neil Finn of Crowded House back in 1987. I believe it was early in 87. I don't have the date on the tape, but that seems to be somewhere in the ballpark. I've not been able to get to putting the podcast up because of lots of things going on at work and just no time. But this weekend got the very tragic and saddening news that Paul Hester, who was the drummer for Crowded House, had taken his own life down in Melbourne, Australia. And given that event, what Neil has to say about Hole in the River on the third and final part of the interview is, I think, even more poignant and, in fact, kind of difficult to listen to, although there is comfort in it as well, because when we talk about these things together and share these things with each other, there's a little bit of hope floating around in there somewhere, I hope. At any rate, I remember Paul Hester from the times I was fortunate enough to meet him, about the time that Crowded House was doing their first tour. And, of course, I remember him from seeing him on stage with the band the three times I saw them. He was very zany, unpredictable. He reminded me somewhat of Keith Moon, whom I never got to meet, but I know about, of course, because of all of his madcap celebrity. And part of that was that he was so smart and so witty, so quick, very quick-witted fellow. And because he was a tremendous drummer, his mother was a jazz drummer, and Paul had gotten a good dose of those genes and really was able to swing in the context of Crowded House in a way that very few other drummers of the day were doing. But most of all, I remember from Paul that he was always apparently thinking, and there was always something. You know, there's some people you just look in their eyes, you see the wheels turning all the time. And some of that was a little bit of drummerly hyperactivity, probably. But some of it was just the mental activity of a guy who was trying very hard to keep up with this newfound celebrity and to take in everything that was going on around him. I also sensed there might be some sadness there, which is not unusual for someone who's a gifted clown to have something beneath all of that that's pretty deep and a little sad. At any rate, I was very, very saddened to hear of Paul's death over the weekend and dedicate this podcast and the whole interview to Paul and the family he leaves behind.
Do you feel like Crowded House is a rebirth for you? A lot of resurrection in Tombstone.
It's definitely feels like a new start. I mean, it's carried with it a whole host of new problems that I never had to deal with Split Enz because I joined a band that was already established to some degree. But it's really exciting. I mean, I've really got, you know, my own destiny on my shoulders, as it were, and that's good. That's a good position to be in.
Although the most difficult one possible in some ways.
Well, yeah, it is, but I would prefer it to be like that. I mean, I think it comes down to the fact that you always want to make you want to make your own mistakes. If anybody's going to have control over your life, it's better if it's yourself.
Is that why you say beware the passenger?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't get carried along. The train's left the station.
Yeah, the train's already left the station. It's like you never had a chance to be wild and free. You've got to give yourself an opportunity sometime to try and fulfill your most outrageous ambitions. That's what I think, anyway. Otherwise, you leave yourself when you get to old age, possibly a little resentful that you never gave yourself an opportunity.
Or even worse, you may end up a hole in the river. Is that another true story?
That's a true story, yeah.
Your aunt?
Yeah, in New Zealand.
What's going on at the end of that song? Is it grim humor with the ghosts and some kind of jaunty jazz? Is it defiance? What's happening?
And to coin your word, it's a juxtaposition of there's a whole array of emotions involved when somebody commits suicide. I don't know if you've encountered it with anybody close to you, but
as a matter of fact, I have. My grandfather.
Yeah, you have that feeling of fear, that you feel their fear to some degree, and that's what the song's about. But it's also kind of, anything like that becomes too, you don't want to dwell on the darker sides of it too much. And there's almost, we're not making light of it particularly, but there's a whole array of emotions that accompanies it. It's the same thing as when you were first told that somebody dies. A natural response is to laugh, and it sounds terrible, but it is something that a lot of people do. Because you don't know how to react. There's no sort of word adequate to describe how you feel.
No, you're absolutely right. It's almost like an easy thing to joke about happening, so much so that when it does happen, it seems ludicrous.
It's pretty scary stuff, really. But we wanted the song to have almost psychedelic overtone to it, because that seems to be the only kind of state you can describe. I mean, it makes you feel really spaced out when you hear about something like that. I know I wrote that song on the day I heard that news, so I was really pleased with the way the song captured the atmosphere.
And born right out of the situation.
Yep.
Do you find that psychedelic state, or to use another new band's terminology, Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians, he defines psychedelic as anything that changes when you look at it closely. Do you find this a place where you can make a lot of connections?
I agree with his description of psychedelic, actually, but I'm not sure what the question was again.
It's a pretty compelling definition. It's the best one I've heard.
Yeah.
That place is real frightening, and fear is a real part of madness and grief, and the state where you're just about to hit on something.
Yeah.
Do you court that a little bit, just to be able to get the insights and still be able to walk away?
Oh, I think so. I think you've got to look as deeply as you can at anything you encounter like that, because otherwise it leaves itself hidden in your brain. Otherwise, I think you have to, better to be out in the open. I always find when dealing with grief, is it's best to be to let it out. And my father, so I'm being really personal here, but my father, along with a lot of other people, have a lot of difficulty expressing grief, and don't get to the point where they don't want to talk about it. And I think that's potentially quite a dangerous situation. Because what you're discussing in the end is your own fear about doing the same thing,
Exactly. I agree with you.
I think you've got to get that out, or else it's very unhealthy.
Absolutely, and it's a surrender in a sense if you don't confront it.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's kind of chickening out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it looks like what have I not covered here?
you've covered a fair bit of ground, actually. I'm impressed by your. Your knowledge of the lyrics, Gardner, that's great.
Well, I did my homework this morning, but I've lived with the album. Ever since the EP came out, I wore the EP out waiting for the album, waiting and waiting and waiting.
Right.
And it got here, and it had some equally fine tracks on it. I think it's a terrific piece of work, Neil, and I wish you all the success in the world. My only fear is that it could be a little too good. I know that must occur to you.
it's a crazy description, isn't it? Right? Hard one to accept that it could be too good, but I think there's life and plenty of life, and I think it's the sort of album that people need to actually listen to properly, and it is very hard these days, it seems, to get people to listen to things properly.
Things
very instant, just like fast food, it's a very instant industry.
Things seem to be opening up just a little bit, though, and in fact there was an album reporting collection that came out that was distributed to radio stations.
Yeah.
And a DJ at WMAD, wherever that is, was trying to persuade his fellow programmers to add Don't Dream It's Over. Did you see that? He said if you take a chance on it, it could be another Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah.
Which is another band that was not working the very mainstream that everyone else was, and has had a great deal of success. In fact, I was just talking to John Hornsby, who writes the songs with his brother Bruce, last night, and I pointed out to him that there seem to be, perhaps, some examples beginning to appear again of pathbreakers.
I hope so. I mean, I've got to hope that we coincide with a good time in American radio. It seems very random in some ways. If you look at radio in general here, it goes through phases of being very conservative, and then occasionally something will break all the rules, and everyone will start thinking, well, maybe we can be a bit adventurous here. And it's kind of luck of the draw which phase you coincide with, so...
Exactly.
Hopefully we'll be part of a new phase.
Stay true to your muse, no matter what happens.
Oh, don't worry, yeah. I mean, I couldn't do anything else anyway, I don't think. But, thanks for playing the record and believing in the record. I still, it's 9 months since we finished it, and I still believe in it really strongly, so I'm determined not to give up on it, that's for sure.
You have my vote, Neil, and my only request is that you hurry up and play somewhere on the East Coast as close to Charlottesville as possible.
Well, yeah, okay, we'll be back anyway. I can assure you we will be playing. When it will be is yet to be established, but soon, hopefully.
Well, thanks for the album, and thanks for the long and frank talk about what went into the songs.
That's
I appreciate
all right. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.